Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. Before we get started, I want to say that Emily does an interview on this episode with who, Emily?
Michael Schenker.
Yes, so stay tuned for that. And I'm going to be talking with Alexandra Zerner. I hope I'm saying that right. Zerner, I think I am. So anyways, two great guitar players. One who was really the architect of heavy metal guitar in a lot of different ways. One of the true... I put him right up there with Iommi, really,
100%.
And Van Halen, and I mean he was before Van Halen, obviously. So, I can't wait to hear this interview that Emily did with Michael Schenker, and let's get into the episode in just a minute. But before we do that, Emily, can you read through our patrons from Patreon? These people pledge money to us every month. And wow, we are just under 30 people at this point. So, and a great bunch of people. Emily, who are they?
The list is growing. So
yes.
Steve Hoker, hey Steve, Mike Jones, Dan Garawan, at Metal Dan, Jerry from Long Island, hey Jerry, Stephen Saylor, Patrick Sportsman, Emma Clayton, our first female. Well, you've already talked about
her. Yeah, Emma's great. She put up a picture of herself on Instagram wearing the shirt that I sent
Love
to
it.
Australia.
Amazing. Joe, Fred Rutz, Sam, is it Soupy or Suppy?
He followed. Soupy.
We're friends on Twitter. Drake, Matt Carroll, Jay Vaninsky, Jason Seth, Jean-Francois Blay. I just listened to the pronunciation online and I can't remember. Ron Keel, hey Ron. James Bennett, Sean Morgan, David Grav. I can't.
David Gray. Yeah, David Gray.
Gray.
Yeah, Mr. David Gray.
Your writing is as bad as our 10-year-olds. Ralph Petrie, John Boveri, Michael Street, Richard Langridge, Miles Atwood, and Anthony Mackey.
Yeah, what a great
group.
Thanks
so much, you guys.
And who's the one guy, Dan?
What, at Metal Dan?
No, isn't there another Dan, or is it Rich? I know there's a bunch of people who just joined, and yeah.
Oh, well, there's Richard Langridge.
Yeah, he just joined.
I think he's new. There were a couple other names. Oh, Dan Garawan.
Yeah, he's new too.
Garawan.
So, yeah, welcome guys. And it's great to have you aboard the Patreon club. You guys are the executive producer of this podcast, which is called Talking Metal.
Black Label presents Heavy Montreal, the heaviest festival in Canada. Back for a 10th edition. 2 days of rock and metal. July 27th and 28th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau. Witness Slayer perform their last show in Quebec ever. Performances by Ghost, Godsmack, Evanescence, Slash, Anthrax, Steel Panther, Killswitch Engage, and many more. 40 bands playing 4 stages on a festival site that you have to see to believe. Festival passes are on sale now. Visit HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Avanco.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
right. So, wow. As we mentioned in the cold open, as us production people like to call it, as we mentioned in the cold open, we have two great guests, and they are Alexandra and Michael. And I cannot wait to talk with both of them. Actually, we've already spoken with both of them. These interviews were recorded ahead of time. And that song we heard right there, Emily, classic Michael Schenker group, Assault Attack, featuring Graham Bonnet, who I love the work he did with Schenker. I love the work he did with Alcatraz and Engve. I love the work that he did with Impellitteri, and everything the guy has done has just been so great. Graham
Bonnet.
And now
Bonnet. he's out right now with Schenker. Yeah, he's got like all the classic vocalists.
Yes.
And then Doogie too.
Yeah, Graham, Gary. He's got Macaulay Schenker, or not Macaulay, Robin Macaulay. The group, it was called Macaulay Schenker Group at the time. And I saw Macaulay Schenker Group open for Rush.
Amazing.
In Worcester, one of the only shows I saw in Worcester. And it had to be 1987, 88. And yeah, that was a great concert. I caught a drumstick by whoever was playing drums.
Amazing.
I'm not sure. Maybe one of you guys know. Whoever was playing drums for Macaulay Schenker on the Rush tour, I caught a drumstick. And then when I came out, I'd separated from my friend who was a drummer. And I faked him out and said, look, I caught Neil Peart's drumstick. But it wasn't Neil Peart's. It was the guy from Macaulay Schenker. But there you go. Let's keep the music going. And first, just tell everyone... Well, we'll come back and talk about that. Let's hit a request. This goes out to one of our patrons, Mike Jones, the Greyhound guy. You know, Mike, down in the Trenton area of New Jersey, Lawrenceville.
I
used to work
in
Lawrenceville.
Yep.
I think I've told Mike that. Yes, and I lived in Pennington, not far from Lawrenceville. So, Mike, this is for you. It's called Roll Over You, and it is by Dee Snider.
It's not just a question. Your time to walk away. I know that you are my enemy. There ain't a chance you'll last a day. You mean nothing to me. Fucking with me. What's your big mistake? You got no heart, and we're not the same. You got so far, but you never came. No heart, and no one you can blame. You try to slow me.
Dee Snider from one of our patrons, Mike Jones.
Yes, off the Love of Metal album, which I think came out last year. And Steven Saylor chimed in on Patreon and said, that's a great choice, Mike. I bought I bought for the love of metal on CD, and I really enjoyed it. Cool. And Stephen, before I forget, I just wanted to thank you for helping line up one of our interviews today with Alexandria Zerner. So that's coming up shortly. But first, I want to talk about M3. I'm so excited to get down to M3 with you, Emily.
Cannot wait.
And I really should, after we're done recording this, pull out the laptop and start lining up our interviews and making sure we have passes and everything, because it's getting a little late in the game. Mitch LaFon will be down there. Psycho Steve, a lot of fellow podcasters and interviewers. So we can't wait to hang with everyone.
You know who else is coming? Lawn Friend.
Lawn Friend. Yeah.
Our favorite.
Yeah, so it's going to be absolutely off the hook with Dokken, a special appearance by George Lynch and Mick Brown at this performance. I can't believe that. Whitesnake, autograph. I'm excited to see Black and Blue. I really
am. You've never seen them.
I've never seen them.
Isn't
of course,
wild?
It'll be without Tommy Thayer, but it still should be pretty cool. I cannot wait.
What's Tommy doing?
Tommy's in a little band called Kiss.
I'm joking. That was a joke.
Yeah. Tora Tora, which
you thought I was serious, didn't you?
For like a split second, but I know better. You are not serious ever. Enough's enough. Vixen, Vane. I've never seen Vane. I really want to see Vane. L.A. Guns, Skid Row.
Oh, should we talk about the controversy
I don't want to get into that. But yeah, there's obviously two different versions of L.A. Guns going on right now. We just saw the other version in New York with Tracy and Phil, and now we're going to see the other version with Kelly and some other people at M3. So in the meantime, let's rock a little Black and Blue here on Talking Metal.
I kinda wanna stay.
I remember seeing that video for Hold On to 18 on a VHS that my friend had dubbed me. He had MTV and I didn't, and he dubbed me a bunch of things.
Was this
off.
Pre-Headbangers Ball?
Yeah. Oh, years and years, years before Headbangers. I mean, it had to be 4 or 5 years before Headbangers. Hold On to 18 by Black and Blue, and I love that video and thought they were just fantastic. So, without further ado, let's get into Michael Shanker. Emily, you conducted this interview. I've had the I've interviewed Michael twice for Talking Metal and once for That Metal Show.
This is my first time, and I honestly am such a huge fan, so in awe of him, and I really think he's one of the architects of the entire, you know, heavy metal genre, really.
He is.
I mean, he is to me and to a lot of people. And I know I'm not the only one who feels that way. So it was thrilling to speak with him.
And in some ways, and no disrespect towards, I mean, we always say Iommi, which, yeah, sure. And Van Halen. And you know, people will say, well, Page and Ritchie Blackmore brought the guitar heaviness to a new level, which they did. But to me, Michael Shanker, even more important than those guys for this genre.
For this genre,
Not more so than Iommi, but for our genre, more so than Page and Blackmore.
And
in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I was so thrilled to get to talk to him. I had so much more to say to him and to ask him,
right?
But we were kind of stuck at like 20 minutes.
They told us a tight 20 minutes.
Tight 20, because he's doing a lot. I mean, he had just done his first show the night before at the Whiskey in LA, and he had two more shows to do at the Whiskey. So I didn't want to, you know, but I could have talked to him for another hour. I mean, for sure. I didn't even get to show off my German.
Oh no!
Du bist so ausgezeichnet, aber ich war ein großes Kopfschmerzen. He would have been so impressed, right?
Yes, he would have. He would have, of course. Yeah. So, without further ado, let's get into some classic Shanker right here on Talking Metal, followed by Emily Striegel's brand new interview with Michael Shanker.
Kids of all the answers. Yes, Michael speaking.
Hi, Michael. This is Emily Striegel from the Talking Metal Podcast. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you. How are you?
So nice to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you.
So I'd like to welcome you to the Talking Metal Podcast. This is my first time speaking with you. I know we've had you on before, but I said it's my turn to interview legendary guitarist Michael Shanker. So good to have you here. Before we get started, I just want to say I'm sorry. I know in the past few days you lost your former bandmate from UFO, Paul Raymond. And I had you been in touch with him all in recent years? How are you doing?
Well, you know, UFO have been doing their own thing for quite a while now. And once in a while, I helped Paul out, and he came with jam with us. It was quite a few years ago. I think I haven't seen him really for like 6 years or something like that. But I knew he was living in Germany, which was a very surprise. And but, you know, I mean, we lost Ted in the 19th of January, and then on the 13th in the morning, I get the message that Paul Raymond passed away. It's just like you don't really know who is next, and it comes, you know, it's like it's often people you don't think.
Right, right. I know. The ones who we thought would be gone 20 years ago are still hanging in there, and then we're losing so many people lately. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was Elliot from Dean Guitars, who looked so healthy and was really fit, and then he died out of the blue, you know. And so it's crazy, you know. But I guess, one, you know, it's just as soon as you're born, you're subject to death, and that's a part of life. And you know, I just say to myself, like, you know, they are going beyond where we are going to be following. You know,
it's true.
So we're going to meet them later.
We will meet them later. And the moral of the story is live every day to its fullest, which you are doing a fantastic job of this. I mean, I am so excited to hear about the second leg of the Michael Shanker Fest tour, which started last night in Los Angeles. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. The Resurrection. It's the second leg of the Resurrection tour, and we're having an album out on a new one, which is already completed. We already had a listening party in Europe. We invited European press, international press, and they love the album. The head of Nuclear Blast in Germany, he's in love with the album. He said, absolutely killer. And so really happy about that. But now, for now, we're focusing on the second leg of the Resurrection Tour. Started yesterday at the Whiskey A Go-Go, where everything started for me in America when I was 18. I think my first concert was there. And and that was the first time we toured with UFO in the States. The second day was San Francisco, 6,000 people holding a light, fire or candle or whatever they did, used in those days. And then I guess we made it all the way through to the East Coast. And I'm sure we played on that same, because we used to do a lot of touring with Jazz Rotel in those days. And, you know, some other bands like that were like headliners, and UFO were just kind of, you know, getting like an underground, you know, hot tip. And so we developed, you know, very quickly from Phenomenon to Faucet and so on, and up to Strangers in the Night. Actually, it took only 8 years, and the first part of my life was dealt with. And then I did the Michael Shanker group and wrote the song Into the Arena. That was the time to get onto the battlefield, the school of life, to learn about, you know, who I am. I had no clue who I was in the first part of my life. I was just having fun playing guitar. I didn't chase anything. I didn't compete. I had no, you know, no idea about this kind of stuff. I just had fun playing guitar, and all of a sudden people were saying, Michael Shanker is God. You know?
I know. Well, you say, I wasn't chasing anything. Well, Michael, you didn't have to chase anything because you were the leader. I mean, one of the most influential guitarists of our time. So it's so exciting to see you back out on the road. I can't wait to see you when you come out east. And on this tour, You have original MSG singers Gary Barden, Graham Bonnet, and Robin McCauley, right?
Yeah, and in addition, Dougie White from Michael Schenker's Temple of Rock.
Temple of Rock,
which
right.
Keeps that past, yeah, which keeps it past and yeah. current, which is really good that Dougie joined the Michael Schenker Fest. But because we have made the Resurrection album, now even the MSG singers, they are also current because we are performing stuff from the Resurrection album as well. And then Dougie has already, with Dougie White, we did the Temple of Rock with Herman and Francis from the Scorpions, and we toured for 5 years. So Dougie has established his own reputation now with his, songwriting. We as a songwriting team, Dougie White and Michael Schenker, and, yesterday when we played, the people, I couldn't believe it. They were really into the Dougie White stuff, you know, because it's so current and it's a different writing in a way. Because Dougie White is a heavy metal singer, and so the songs since 2008, I lost my stage fright. I guess because I was in the school of life, I was learning a lot and had a lot of breakthroughs, and I turned 180 degrees, and I have become a frontman from this shy little boy in the beginning, and now I have become a frontman and. That in 2008, when I said to myself, I want to be on stage, I said, what, Michael? What did you just say? And I took that as a sign that the middle years, the school of life is done with, dealt with, and that it's time to go back to the roots where I left off with Strangers in the Night. And that's what I did. I didn't reach for the commercial success in my middle years. I was granted to experience what it was like, to be famous. So I was able to make a decision if I needed to stay up there or if I wanted to carry on with my vision, doing pure self-expression and experimenting with music. And I decided to, let the commercial machine do its thing, and I just, step back a bit and, started things on a lower level, but focused more on experimenting. I did instrumental albums, acoustic instrument, electric instrumentals and all that kind of stuff. I got everything out of my system. And instead of double platinum albums and all the money that the 80s musicians made when I left that scene, I became fulfilled instead. And that's wonderful because that's exactly what I want. I've got two tattoos on my back. One says born to be free and one says born to overcome. And that's why the middle years were so important for me to learn about life, about myself, and get a deeper understanding, maybe some questions answered, some kind of revelations, some realizations, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result of that, I have built a cake. And I'm getting a lot of icing now, versus if I would have made a choice to stay up there, go with Ozzy Osbourne or stay with UFO or go with Scorpions, they would have hated me because of my experimental state of mind,
Right.
I wouldn't have fitted the commercial machine. But they got a lot of icing, but they have no cake. So I have a cake. I told this our video producer. He said, "Oh, you mean like a lot of feathers without meat?" Yeah, it was just like that.
Feathers, meat, icing, cake. It's the same analogy. I love it. I love it. But yeah. The thing is, everyone realizes that you're authentic. I mean, the word that comes to my mind about you, you stayed true to you. And everyone knows it. So that authenticity is what allowed you to, that's probably why you overcame your stage fright, because you were true to yourself and you didn't have to please anyone else or try and figure out, oh, what's the next big thing? You were authentic,
Yeah, and there is a saying. So when you're 20 years old and you hear that wisdom of speech, like people say, stay true to yourself and everything else will be added onto you and more. You don't know really what that means when you're 20, and you don't necessarily believe it. And it's kind of interesting, but that's not really why I did it. But I knew about that saying, You know, you hear it when you're young, but when you actually stay true to yourself,
yes.
and I did that for a half a century so far, then you find out it's not just a saying, it is actually a fact.
Absolutely.
Because you lived it, and now you know it is true.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm in awe of you because it seems like your creative output is at an all-time high. I mean, you are just putting out so much music. And so, you know, what's inspiring you to work so hard right now to make so much new music at this stage in your career? Is it exactly what you said just now, that you've kind of come through this part in your career and now you just feel free to create?
Well, the thing is, I was bubbling with creativity. I mean, overflowing. It had to be dealt with on a different level. I needed to do whatever came to my mind to get everything out of my system. Electric instrumentals, acoustic instrumentals. I did albums where one riff to another were. Other musicians could have helped themselves. I could have made out of one album, 10 albums. That's how much material was on there.
Right.
So I needed to get all of this out. And maybe it was meant to be that I did that because maybe it helped the rock world to stay a bit fresher rather than keep recycling the trend and the trend and then recycle that and then recycle that. And in the end, you have got nothing left. So because I wasn't really... needed in the 80s, you know, I created in the 70s what people used in the 80s. Maybe
True.
That was my assignment.
Yeah.
Then I wasn't needed for the 80s. And the people that were, you know, busy in the 80s, they were, you know, maybe musically not that developed. And it made it easier for the audience to understand what was going on because maybe what I was, you know, I think it encouraged people, you know, for instance, AC/DC, you know, keeping it very simple. It encourages people maybe to play music themselves. Wow, I can do that. I can do that,
yeah.
you know, and so on. And I guess, you know, and then when all of that was done, now people, after 40 years of this music, you know, people are educated, you know, they're ready to go to deeper levels. And you know, and I'm coming back, and I've been back since 2008. I started to get back into the thing. And then, of course, because, like I said, I overflow with creativity and I got everything out of my system. That's first of all the experimental stuff, crazy stuff that I did, it's done with. I can play saxophone now if I want to because I did everything. But I don't want to play saxophone. I want to do the Michael Schenker Fest and I want to celebrate. And the band and everybody else in the band is also celebrating. You know, we want to celebrate our lives and we want to celebrate that whole journey that includes our fans and everybody involved, you know. And so it's a journey and it's so fantastic to see the smiling eyes and smiling faces, you know, looking at you, having a show on stage that includes a whole decade of different eras of my lineups and singers, you know, Gary Barden, Graham Bonnet, Robin McCauley, and then later Dougie White, starting in around when was it 2012, 2013, and we did like two albums together, and the people they singing along with even with Dougie stuff, you know, and
yeah.
So he has. You know, Temple of Rock has even got some classics now already, 5-6 years later. And it's great, you know, for the audience to see a whole 10 years, you know, flashing by in front of them in an hour, 150 minutes on stage. Going through the most popular music of Michael Schenker, sung by original singers, with the exception of UFO songs, of course, and the Scorpions.
Amazing, amazing. And so, are you doing any songs from the new album at all on the tour? Or are you saving all those?
Not of the very new album,
yeah.
Because this is just. resurrection to a second leg.
Yeah.
And because we had a lot of success during the first one last year, and we left out a lot of cities because America is so big. So we decided to do the cities where there were still people wanting to see this. And then also we repeated some cities, but in different venues. Like, for instance, yesterday, the 15, 16, 17, so the Whiskey A Go Go, which was the beginning, which, you know, we played in Anaheim last year, a big place. And this time, you know, somebody suggested, hey, let's do a special in the Whiskey A Go Go.
I'm so jealous I'm not there. Three nights at the Whiskey.
Yeah,
amazing.
It must be an extreme experience because it's so small and so intimate and so close to the people. You know, but it's the only one that we do on that level. But, you know, it's great to do this sometimes. And people, it's a very different connection, you know, to the band on stage than it is in a bigger place. It has, you know, bigger place has got another advantages, you
sure.
know, but this was an extreme experience, you know, our first show at the Whiskey A Go Go. And then, of course, you know, Ted McKenna passed away on the 19th of January. And then we had to really figure out what to do. And so Simon Phillips came out of the, you know, he was the first drummer of the Michael Schenker group in 1980. And so he was happy to be part of this. And then Bodo Schopp from the Macaulay Schenker group, he also was available. And because we have a 150-minute show and 13 songs to record on an album, on the new album, Ted was scheduled in for the 21st of February. And so, you know, we had to figure out how to deal with this. And it was too much for one drummer. So Simon Phillips wasn't available for touring anyway. And so we decided between Bodo and Simon, mm-hmm. Simon would do 10 songs on the new album called Revelation. And Bodo did 3 songs. And then I took Bodo to the UK with me. And we rehearsed our butts off, you know. And
that's
we
awesome.
Got everything done in time. We finished the master for the album. Did a listening party on the 30th of March, and it went down very well. And then we got ready to Bodo, got everything done with me on the, by the time, well, we had Chris there and Steve too. By the time we, just before we left on the 24th, March, we finished our rehearsal with the musicians. And then we came over here and did full rehearsals and, you know, everything worked out.
That's
and
fantastic.
I'm really happy about that. Mm-hmm. And so here we go, the beginning of the tour.
Yeah, it's amazing. And not only do you have so many dedicated fans, but you have so many musicians you've inspired through the years. And one of my favorite moments that I have to mention to you before you go is on the TV show, That Metal Show, when you did the duel with Kirk Hammett, who obviously you were extremely influential to Kirk and so many other guitarists. And then he went on to be on your album in 2018. Do you have a relationship with Kirk? Do you guys ever talk?
Well, the thing is, to be honest, I only talk to journalists on the phone.
That's all right.
I don't talk to my closest people, to my family member. I don't talk on the phone.
Yeah.
I only text because somehow on the telephone, a lot of things, you know, I never used to have a phone when I was a kid. We had a neighbor knocking on our wall that there's a phone call. My parents just simply didn't want the telephone. So I never established a relationship with a telephone. But I'm okay with the telephone if I do interviews, you know, I'm fine. But, you know, it's not, I don't spend a lot of time talking. I spend more time focusing.
Yes.
and creating, you know.
You're an artist, a true artist, Michael.
Yeah. And so the telephone, I can communicate even with my son, who is a tour manager. You know, when he speaks to me, I can hardly understand what he's trying to say. But when he emails me or texts me, I get the point. I have time to think about it. I have time to figure out how, instead of making haste, you know, like quick comments that maybe not being thought of, I like the way of when people ask me something on a level of you know, putting a tour together and stuff like that. Hey, what do you think about that? Well, let me think about that, you know. And so, and when I explain how I see it, I can do it in such a way that it can't be misunderstood. And sometimes in quick conversations on telephone, making arrangements, things can be miscommunicated. So I like to, you know, do the email approach and the text messages. I like it much better. So the question was, do you, I...
We were talking about Kirk Hammett. And by the way, I'm with you. Yeah, I prefer the written.
Kirk is like, you know, I used to live with Peter Mensch, you know, he was the manager for Metallica.
Yes.
For like 2-3 years, I lived with him. And eventually he told me that Kirk, that I'm his Santa Claus. And, and so... You know, and over the years, Kirk always wanted to meet me, and James Hetfield, you know, the singer from Metallica, he came to a San Francisco show, and you know, before even Kirk, and so eventually Kirk had this idea, and they put together that metal show, you know, to jam with me and do all of these things. So he wanted to get that out of his system, and so I agreed, and we did that. It was fantastic, and we became kind of friends, and then when it was time to record, I thought of him. I said, hey, Kirk, you know, do you want to do this? And he said, come on, let's do it.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so like I'm, you know, because I know, you know, that I mean a lot to him, and he is in the biggest band of the world, in the world. And so I know the other guys. I know Ulrich. I mean, the music world is a small world anyway. You know, so like I know a lot of people and they are close to me, but it doesn't mean I talk to them every day.
I hear you 100%. I'm right there with you. And I know you have a lot of other interviews and promotion to do. And you have show number 2 of the tour happening at the Whiskey A Go-Go tonight. So I won't keep you any further. But I want to remind our listeners, Talking Metal, Michael Schenker Fest kicked off the tour yesterday at the Whiskey A Go-Go. You guys are going to be... you'll include performances in Vancouver, Chicago, New York. You're going to be going all the way up till May 18th in Austin, Texas. So check tour dates, because most likely they're going to be coming through your town. What's the best place we can find out about tour dates, Michael?
Yeah, Michael Schenker himself. you know, the website.
Yes.
Facebook, you know, they can find out. That's it, I
all
guess.
Right. Or, yes.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes open and your ears open, and we're definitely going to catch you when you're out east. It's a pleasure having you on Talking Metal today, Michael. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us.
Thank you very much.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the tour. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
So I
All right, that song right there, Heart and Soul, featuring on guitar not only Michael Schenker, but Kirk Hammett of Metallica and Robin McCauley on vocals. Yeah, man, great stuff.
So good.
Cool. So let's get into another song. This is Who Lives Forever by Bronx Casket Company.
To live forever and ever.
goes out to Steve Hoker, Who Lives Forever by Bronx Casket Company. Steve, you are one of our patrons. Thank you for supporting us.
Steve isn't just a patron. Steve's a friend.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Man, we've hung out with Steve.
Yes. He's great. Great guy. And right now we're going to get into my interview with a cool, cool chick who I didn't know anything about until Steven Saylor introduced me to her. And wow, what an introduction. What a great musician. I mean, this, you got to hear her. She takes it to another level. I mean, it's not just like metal and hard rock. There's classical influences, jazz influences. I mean, she is total musician. You're going to love this, Emily. Her name is Alexandra Zanner, and she is just fantastic. This is The Oracle off the Opus 1880 record from 2018, followed by my interview with Alexandra. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we have Alexandra Zerner, guitar player. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Tell us the story behind your last name. That's a unique last name. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yes. Thank you for that. It's coming from Czech, actually, because my family comes from the Czech Republic some decades ago, and this is where the name comes from. As far as I know, it dates back to Austria, and this is the farthest that I could track.
Right. Wow. History.
But basically, this is where it comes from.
Yeah, my last name is Striegel, and I've heard, you know, it's German, but it also has some roots in Austria, I've heard. So It's very, very interesting. And you know what? I just want to talk to you. Let's get right to it. Your guitar playing is absolutely fantastic. And my friend Steven Saylor recently turned me on to your playing. And I must admit, sadly, I wasn't aware of you before he spent some time filling me in on who you are and playing me some of your songs. And I got to say that the new album, Opus 1880, which is probably less than like 5 months old at this point, it just sounds so great. And let's talk about this record, and then maybe we'll get into a little bit of your history. This is, correct me if I'm wrong, is this your what number record is this for you? How many records?
It's third full album.
Third, but it's like a double disc, right?
Yes, it's a double CD.
Yeah, wow. Third album, and it sounds fantastic. Did you work with a certain producer on it?
I'm the producer.
You were the producer. And
actually, I did almost everything regarding the work of this album, from the composing to mastering to basically everything.
Wow. Well, congratulations, because it's not only is the guitar playing great, but I mean the songwriting is also just fantastic. There are some great guests on the record, I guess I'd call them, with you. But let's talk about the difference between how you approach songwriting and how you approach just like playing guitar. Do you have to get in a different mindset to actually create songs as opposed to just sitting down and playing guitar?
It's hard to explain, actually,
right,
what's happening. I believe there is a different mindset in both cases, because when I'm just playing, it's one mindset. Usually it's more like the practice mindset. And at certain moments, it becomes jamming, or when certain riffs or a melody pops in my head, and then the mindset shifts, of course, because it's already a different kind of task.
Right. Yeah.
So composing is different from practicing, and one requires just focusing on technical execution and things like that, right, while composing is a little bit more abstract thing to do.
Yeah.
And they both are different from what I have on my daily basis, like when I'm just reading or working something else.
Right. Right. Very. And again, the songwriting is just great on this. And let's talk a little bit about the story behind it, because, you know, would you consider it a concept record? Would you consider it a concept record?
Yes, it's absolutely a concept record. Actually, my previous albums are also concept records, but they're a little bit harder to grasp like such, because probably the way I constructed them was not yet so prominently conceptual. I mean, not so easy to see that it's a conceptual work, especially the first album, Nine Stories. It's very hard to see the common thread that goes along the whole album. But the new one, the Opus 1880, is a complete work, like a progressive rock symphony or something like that.
Absolutely. And what is the actual story behind Opus 1880?
The actual story may sound a little bit cheesy, because it's the main idea is like it's a romantic story, but it's actually a steampunk sci-fi type of novel.
Right.
And it's actually a book, and this is what goes together with the album. So it's like a soundtrack to a book or something like that. And it's about a woman who is searching for the perfect love. And this is the cheesy part.
Right, right.
And, she encounters a lot of strange problems along the journey. And it intertwines very, very interesting things like science and some sort of occultism and all kinds of interesting things. I believe every fan of fiction writing would be satisfied by such production. And since I know that a lot of my fan base are actually interested in such kinds of literature and such kinds of movies and so forth, and this was one of the reasons I went for such solution for this album.
Right. Now you said, did you say there was a book that goes with the album?
Yes, there is a book which is based on this exact story, which I invented, so to say. And I work with a professional writer so we can do an actual book, because I'm not a writer.
I just
sketch the story, the characters, locations, and just important points in the story. But everything else I did together with Slav Georgiev. He has his first book on Amazon, so everyone who is interested can check him out.
Absolutely. Will the Opus 1880 book be available for purchase?
It goes along with the CD. So
it comes with the CD. Okay.
It's a full package. And there are the two CDs, the booklet with the lyrics and the actual book. So it's all one product that everyone can find on my site, which is alexandrazerner.com.
That's awesome. And was the making of Opus 1880 a lot different from your previous albums?
Not very different, but to a certain degree, yeah. First, of course, it's way longer because it's 2 hours of music, essentially. There are 22 songs, and they're very, very different in terms of genre, because I spread my musical mind to wander whatever I decide to, because the whole story actually develops in a very, very strange way, and I need to describe what's happening there in a proper way, and this requires a little bit more variety in terms of styles and instruments and so forth. So I needed to work with a broader range of instruments and approaches. So this is one of the things that makes it more difficult. Also, this is the first album that I work with singers, and it was an additional challenge.
So some of the singers, Ivan is on there with you, and I know Angel, right? And
yes, there are several singers and guest musicians in general. So the singers are Ivan Ivanov, which is a singer from the Bulgarian metal band Velion, which are my friends, and they make awesome music. You can check them out. Angel Wolf Black, who is currently singing in Vivaldi Metal Project. And Angel actually sings most of the songs in the album. There are
right.
In total 11 songs.
And she sounds great, by the way. What a voice.
Yes, definitely. And there are 11 songs, 11 instrumentals that are spread not entirely evenly, but you can find both songs and instrumentals in both parts of the album. If Ivanov is doing some spoken words along the album, which is a requirement for a progressive rock opera, so to speak, and he also sings in one of the tracks. I've got Svetlana Bliznakova from the Bulgarian rock band Sevi. She sings in two songs. She also has an amazing voice, very dramatic. I've got my friend Misha Iliev, who sings in one of the songs. He has a great vocal school here in Sofia, Bulgaria. And these are the singers. I've got a few guest musicians, and they're Frank Hermani from Adagio, the French progressive metal band, their epic band. Bobby Koble from Death. Yavor Pachowski, which is a keyboard player in two progressive rock Bulgarian bands. One of them is called EU Vigi, and the other one is called Balkan G. Very, very nice bands. I also have Gretchen Mann.
I was going to ask you about Gretchen, because she's an American guitar player, right?
Yes, yes, and she's a friend of mine. She's an outstanding musician and guitar player, composer, and wonderful person as well.
How did you get to know her?
Social media. Okay. And we started communicating, and we found a lot of common interests. Like books and all kinds of things. And we started talking, and this is how it developed.
Awesome. You know, on the album, I hear so many different musical influences. Obviously, there's the hard rock, there's the heavy metal. But, you know, I hear hints of classical, hints of even jazz. Am I jazz fusion? Am I correct in that?
Yes. And I wanted to mention two more names.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But since we speak about classical, yes, I've got a cello player, which is Nora Kalcheva from the Bulgarian string quartet, the Strings. This is how they are called, the Strings. Mysteria, of course, epic keyboard piano player, which is the mastermind behind Vivaldi Metal Project. And he also plays with Bruce Dickinson and many more bands and artists. He's genius, and he played a beautiful piano part in one of the tracks, and Nora Kalcheva plays the cello part in the same song. The jazzy thing is actually thanks to Bobby Koble, because besides being a lead guitar player for Death and consequently Dead to All Tours, the tribute band that they're actually doing tours.
Right.
He's also a professor of jazz guitar.
Wow.
And this is why I made this track, especially for him, with a jazz part and metal part. So we can hear him in both different emploi.
Very cool.
And he did a wonderful job.
Yes.
Like, through everyone else.
Again, we are talking about the album Opus 1880. We're going to have links up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com and talkingrock.net. You guys have to hear this album. It's absolutely fantastic. And Alexandra, what about the music scene over in Bulgaria? Sofia, Bulgaria? That's where you're from?
Sofia.
What is it like?
Very tight. Actually, it's very, very hard to do music here in Bulgaria in general, because it's a poor country.
Right, right.
And so the music scene suffers a lot, and there are tons of bad influences here that happen, and it makes it hard for the musicians who do rock and metal and this kind of music to make any actual music career here. So all of the musicians actually have additional one or two jobs just to make sure that they'll secure living and they will be able to buy gear and invest into cities, merchandise and things like that. So yeah, it's very hard.
Right. Totally understand that. And what about your musical influences? When you were younger, who were some of the people that inspired you musically?
Oh, it's a very, very long list.
I'm sure it is. Because you're so diverse. I mean, you hear so much different, many different styles in your playing. So I'm sure there's a lot of different influences.
Yes, I happen to listen to a lot of things in my childhood and in my teenage years and later. Basically, what I remember is that I was very, very inspired by bands like Pink Floyd and Queen and Beatles, and then Dio, Metallica, Megadeth, Blind Guardian, and then a lot of progressive rock bands like Yes, Marillion, Jethro Tull, then Dream Theater, of course, Rush. It's hard to list all of them. Of course, guitar players that I came to know when I started playing. So probably my first inspiration purely guitar-wise was Brian May, and this was his parts that I was playing on tennis racket when I was a child. Yeah, and lately I discovered Yngwie Malmsteen, Jason Becker, Marty Friedman, Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, Tony McAlpine, John Petrucci, of course, and many more after that. But I believe these were the first one that made me really into this kind of playing.
Right. And when did you start playing?
I started playing actually just before I turned 8.
Wow.
And I started with classical guitar, actually. I played for a few years, and I believe 4 years I played classical guitar, and then I switched to electric, and this is how it all started. And since I was very interested in music in general, and all the time I was trying to produce music from everything that creates sound. So it could be even frying pans or whatever thing that you can actually imagine. And I was very interested in playing all kinds of instruments. And this is how I started playing bass. I took some drums lessons. I started playing piano. Few years later, I started playing mandolin, banjo, steel guitar, and recently, actually, a few months ago, I started playing the flute.
Really? Wow. Wow. Good for you. That's awesome. And I know you do like session work and collaborations too, outside of your own stuff. Could you talk a little bit about some of your recent collaborations?
The recent collaborations are, for example, with the band CV that I mentioned.
Right.
That Svetlana Bliznakova is the lead singer of this band. And I worked with them together with the new album, Follow Me. And I recorded basically all the guitars and keyboards in this album except one song. And essentially, this is the newest thing. And before that, the last thing I collaborated with, I believe it was Vivaldi Metal Project. I recorded a solo for the debut album, The Four Seasons.
Cool. And you give guitar lessons too, right, via Skype? So even somebody in America could take guitar lessons from you.
Yes, yes. This is my main job, actually.
Yeah. And how do they get in touch with you? Is that just through the website for guitar lessons?
Yes, on the website, there's a link for the guitar lessons, and there are all the options and explanations of everything that I offer, different kinds of options and stuff.
Cool. Cool. Well, you're a fantastic player. I mean, that's evident.
Also
and
Facebook group page about my lessons.
Okay, cool. We'll have that up in today's show notes, guys, on talkingmetal.com and talkingrock.net. I see that you're going to be doing some supporting of the Great Dream Theater later this year. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, yes.
How did that come about?
Really a dream come true.
I can imagine.
Yes, they're just, they wanted three local bands from Bulgaria as an opening act, and I sent my EPK, and since I'm one of the few progressive rock artists currently in the Bulgarian scene, probably this is one of the reasons I actually came to be one of the three bands that will be opening for Dream Theater.
That's awesome.
This is how it happens, and I still find it hard to believe, because it's an epic thing for me. I mean, there was they were one of the bands that inspired me the most for being progressive rock musician in general. So yeah, it's a huge thing for me, really.
Congratulations. That's going to be great show, I'm sure. And have you opened for many other bands, been a supporting act for many other bands in Bulgaria?
Not many, actually. Opened for Stu Hamm and Greg Howe.
Right, cool.
Back in 2016. And basically, this is it for now.
And in 2018, you participated in the female guitarist roundtable discussion. Can you talk a little bit about what that was and how it was for you?
It was a huge honor in the first place, because I was invited by Jennifer Button, and she's also one of my biggest inspirations back in the years, and I was at first very surprised, because I wasn't expecting such things to happen, and sharing this table with such names, it was really a huge honor for me, and I felt a little bit anxious, and this is how it went. I needed to spend some time just listening until I managed to fit properly into the discussion, because yes, I was a little bit shocked.
Yeah. So was Jennifer Batten who contacted you about doing it?
Yes,
wow,
we
awesome.
Actually turned out that we've got a mutual friend, which is a dear friend of mine, and he supported my career from the beginning, and he actually mentioned my name to her, and I believe this helped a lot.
Right. Sure. Well, to just wrap things up, I know you play many different instruments and probably have tons of different instruments and gears and pedals and amps and stuff, but let's just talk about
No.
Okay.
I mean, I play a lot of instruments, but I don't have a lot of gear.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Well, what gear do you have? What are your favorite guitars? What's your go-to guitar?
I've got my custom guitar from the Bulgarian brand Univox Guitars, and this is my main instrument. It's an 8-string electric guitar, and the other guitar that I use is an 8-string Jackson, and basically these are the electric guitars that I have.
Right.
I've got one electric bass and one acoustic guitar and one mandolin, lap steel guitar and the flute, and I've got my MIDI keyboard, and basically this is my gear.
Wow. Okay. So not really into having a lot of effects and pedals and stuff like that.
I am, but can't really afford them.
Gotcha. What about a banjo? You mentioned you play some banjo. Do you have your own banjo?
Yes. I don't have one.
Right.
I just borrowed back in the days, but right now I can't.
Right. I hear you. Cool. Well, I hope we can turn some new listeners on to your music. Again, we're going to be featuring some of it on the podcast today and encouraging everyone to check it out. It's on Amazon. It's on Spotify, iTunes, you name it. And yeah, great, great work on Opus 1880. We really appreciate you spending some time with us today, Alexandra.
Thank you very much for the opportunity and for the wonderful words. I'm very flattered.
Thank you.
right there, Memoirs of a Geisha from 2014 by Alexandra Zerner. Thank you, Alexandra, for joining us. We really appreciate your time. We wish you the best of luck, and we want all the Talking Metal listeners to go listen to your music, stream it online, and buy it, and support what you do. And also, she gives Skype guitar lessons, which I think is really cool. And when you hear her play, you will realize that, wow, she's got to be a great teacher because she knows her music for sure. And it's not just the technique. She obviously is really into the theory and stuff too. You can hear it. What beautiful music. What a beautiful guitar player. She is making some just gorgeous music. So thank you, Alexandra, for hanging with me on Talking Metal. And thanks to Steve Saylor for introducing me to her. Emily, I think that's going to do it. We're going to get ready for M3. And I got to line up.
We
got
to enjoy ourselves this year a little bit. Sometimes we go to these festivals and we run. This year, you and I are making a pact that we are going to have a beer together.
Yes.
And we're going to have beers with other people. And we're going to sit down and enjoy some music, too, and not just be running around the entire time.
I know, but there was a bunch of listeners on Facebook who said they were going, so please track us down.
I want to say hi to people, too.
Track us
down. I want to get out there. Yeah.
For sure. And we're going to leave it there today, guys. Please support us on Patreon. Get that bonus podcast every week. The only people who get it are the people who support us on Patreon. It goes up every Friday. It's co-hosted by Victor Ruiz. And it's called the Mark Striegel Podcast, available exclusively to our 27 patrons on Patreon. And you can get that bonus podcast with as little as a $2 a month donation, which is like nothing. That's like you spend more on your latte every day than that. So, yeah, check us out on Patreon, guys. And for $5 a month, you get the bonus podcast. Plus, I send you a T-shirt and a bunch of other stuff. So check us out on Patreon. Okay, cool. Later.